Here's Bill.
Bottom of this hour, Congressman Pete Hoekstra on the CIA interrogations. But right now, the honor of talking to Michael Rubin, resident scholar of the American Enterprise Institute, about the situation in Pakistan. Thanks for being available again, Michael.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Are you still at Fort Bragg?
No, I'm back in Washington. I'll be off to Fort Hood next week.
Bless your heart for doing that. One moment of levity here on this story. I know that doesn't seem much levity, but I mentioned the Swat Valley. And I said to Seth, I said, this used to be like a honeymoon place, kind of a nice place, and he laughed at me.
Yeah, no, I was thinking the same thing. This was the Aspen of Pakistan.
Okay. It's a nice place, right?
Ski resorts, ski lifts. In fact,
really?
One of the major Taliban figures who we're talking about now used to be a ski lift operator at one of the resorts in Swat Valley.
How the mighty have fallen.
Exactly.
All right. The other thought that comes to mind when you say Swat Valley is the aptly named Swat Valley. You know,
exactly.
All sorts of flying, stinging insects or something.
No, but, indeed. It's quite high, and it's green. It's got terraced fields. I remember when I was little just looking through travel catalogs and seeing all these high-end tours that had as their destination Swat.
Is this getting up towards the Karakoram, towards the big mountains?
Yes, it is.
Because that's now you're getting into stuff I know about. I know about K2 and all that. So
yeah,
anyway.
I mean, this was a stop on the way there.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Seth. I think best for you to rest the show to do you know what. Okay. All right. Anyway, I jumped out of my chair yesterday. CNN was very excited about it. Couldn't tell whether it was a big story or not to anybody else. So I said, let's get Michael Rubin. Taliban militants reportedly established effective control of a strategically important district, the Bunar. How do you say it?
Bunar,
just 70 miles from the capital, and they are pushing into all sorts of places. And I guess this morning got a hold of some kind of facility that brings gasoline to NATO, and they're moving like red ants. How big a deal is this, Michael?
I think this is a very big deal. First of all, these guys have already tried one attack on Islamabad back, I believe it was in July 2007, when you may remember that they took over the so-called Red Mosque in Islamabad.
Oh,
and
okay,
the Pakistani
okay,
army
okay.
Had to retract it. But what basically has happened, Swat is an area of 1.5 million people, although over the course of the past few months, about 500,000 of those have fled. Now, there's been fighting with this Taliban group, only around 3,000 Taliban troops since 2007. But in February, you had something called the Malakand Accords. And what this basically did was the Pakistanis agreed to withdraw their army and allow the Taliban to establish Sharia law. This is February, so separately, President Obama can't say that this happened on anyone else's watch or blame anyone else. After all, what the Pakistani government was doing was just having this dialogue, was having this belief that you could negotiate or engage with the Taliban. We now see the effects. Less than 2 months later, the number of Taliban fighters in the region in Swat has doubled. You have this march on this neighboring district heading towards Islamabad, the capital of nuclear-capable Pakistan.
Good
Just
Lord.
Yesterday, the head of the Taliban group in the region, and we talked a couple days about different Taliban groups. This is the most radical of them. Sufi Muhammad, the head of this group called Tariqi Nafazi Shariati Muhammad, Movement for the Enforcement of Muhammad's Law, said that he would personally welcome Osama bin Laden to come back to this region.
All right. A couple things, Michael. Michael, will you stay with us, take a couple calls?
Yeah, of course.
In light of the importance of this story, we're going to try to amplify it here. Well, bottom line, end of the story, and then I'm going to fill in questions. Can they do this? Could they take over Islamabad and Pakistan?
It depends what the Pakistani army would do. They certainly could give the Pakistani army a fight, but it's different fighting in the mountains around Swat or Bunar and fighting in the plain, which is Islamabad.
An army's fight. When I was watching yesterday on CNN, Blitzer had the ambassador from Pakistan to the U.S. You know his name, I don't.
Haqqani, I believe.
Okay, and he was pressing him, and the guy said, you know, you're getting too excited. We have an army. It's a big army, very big. And it will be able to repel this. I had a couple of questions. One, is there sympathy, Taliban sympathy in the army? Two, you referred, I think, to Taliban military or Taliban uniform, Taliban. I thought it was more like a mob moving. Is it a military unit of a Taliban, or is it a mob, or is it both?
It's both. You have, first of all, there is sympathy in the army for the Taliban. More generally, there's sympathy in the army for Islamists, and what's worse is the intelligence services, the so-called ISI of Pakistan, which is what supported the Taliban in Afghanistan up until 9/11 and even after. Now, what we've seen in the march to Bunair has basically just been a convoy of these so-called jingle trucks, these brightly colored trucks with a ragtag militia. But behind this ragtag militia are these hardened guys who have been able to fight off the Pakistani army in the mountains and have doubled their forces since the Malakand Accords were signed in February.
My wife, I'm just curious, my wife, when we were watching it, said, I wish Musharraf were back. Is that the right sentiment? I said, maybe I do too.
Well, we'll see. I mean,
yeah.
It certainly was a mistake to believe that they could negotiate with the Taliban.
Okay.
And it's also, frankly, a mistake. Hillary Clinton said yesterday, the government of Pakistan must begin to deliver government services. Otherwise, they're going to lose out on those who show up and claim that they can solve people's problems, and then they will impose this harsh form of oppression on women and others. This has nothing to do with lack of services. This was a resort area. This had was strictly due to deciding that you could engage with the Taliban.
Okay. What about the other question I asked? How much Taliban sympathy is there among the military?
Oh, among the military, there's a great deal. And this actually goes into Pakistani history, but I'll keep it brief. Pakistan, when it was founded on Islamic identity, but then in 1971, Bangladesh broke away.
Right.
The lesson the army learned was that ethnic nationalism was a dangerous thing, and Pakistan ethnically is a very diverse country. So what the Pakistani army got into its head was that they would only support Islamist groups. This is why, even though a lot of people say the Americans created the Taliban, that's nonsense. The Taliban were 4 years old at the time, and of the Soviet invasion and so forth. And no matter what you say about the CIA, they don't train kindergartners. Anachronistic analysis.
Right.
Now, but what happened was Afghanistan is a landlocked country. The Pakistanis said, yes, we will help you fight the Soviet invasion, but this is our condition, because in multilateral cooperation, you always have conditions. Their condition was, you have to only support the Islamist groups. We Pakistanis are the ones that are going to deliver the weapons. So you had all these more secular nationalist groups which dried up in Afghanistan, and all you had left were the Islamist groups. If anyone in your audience or if you saw the movie The Kite Runner, at the beginning of the movie, you saw almost a Western-style Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan. Why did it change so radically? It changed because the Pakistani army decided that during the resistance to the Soviet invasion in Afghanistan, that only the Islamist groups would be supported.
I got you. All right, you said I may have misheard. Afghanistan is landlocked. Pakistan's not, right?
Pakistan is not landlocked.
Arabian Sea, right? Right on the sea.
Yeah, I mean, basically the Indian Ocean.
Indian Ocean,
the Chinese,
yeah,
are busy building a naval base in Pakistani Baluchistan.
Okay.
That's another story.
What, guys, this is great. It's just great to have you, Michael. What should they do, and what should we do? Start with us. What should we do?
We've really got to press on the Pakistanis not to negotiate and to take this fight,
okay,
to the Taliban before the Taliban take it to the Pakistanis.
Okay, and what should they do? Same thing, not negotiate with the Taliban, draw a line somewhere?
Basically, they've got to draw a line, and they've got to move into these federally administered tribal areas and basically show the Taliban that they can't do this. The irony of this, of course, is that in the Swat Valley, the people didn't even vote for the Taliban. The Taliban were imposed on them after the government cut the steel.
Is it inevitable? Is the Taliban going to succeed in Pakistan? It's not inevitable, you're saying.
It's not inevitable.
How would you bet it?
I'd bet it 30-70. 30% yes, 70% no. But the fact of the matter is,
okay,
when you have Pakistan being a nuclear-capable state,
boy, oh boy,
then it's a real problem. And when we talk about nuclear-capable states, oftentimes we talk about this in the abstract. What we have to worry about is chain of custody over,
yes,
nuclear material,
yes, I understand,
and also doctrine for use.
Understand. Michael, stay with us, okay? We'll take,
okay,
calls. Folks, here's a rare opportunity to ask Michael Rubin a question about this center of world attention right now, Pakistan. 866-680-6464. 866-680-6464. Morning radio to wake up the mind. It's Bill Bennett. Stay with us. Give us a call. Your question. Let me see if I got this right. Michael Rubin is staying with us. You went to Taliban school with John Walker Lind. Do I have this right?
No, I went to the same Arabic language school in Yemen as John Walker Lind. And then in March of 2000, I was spent time in the Taliban's Afghanistan. And actually in 1997, I was in Mazar-i-Sharif, a town in northern Afghanistan, with the opposition to the Taliban when the Taliban attacked the city.
Holy smokes. Wow. You got a heck of a history here, Michael. You really...
Well, I was young and stupid, and my parents thought I was in the Bahamas or something.
Real? Was this reckless?
It was. In retrospect, I can't believe I did it, but I'm glad I did.
Did they know your name was Michael Rubin?
Yes, they did. In fact, I had to get a visa to go into the Taliban territory, a visa from the Taliban embassy. The thing is,
wow, isn't that dangerous?
Even though I have a last name Rubin, that's more of a European Jewish name, and so they don't recognize it.
Wow. All right. I'm with your parents. You should have been in the Bahamas. Okay. Or the Swat Valley, at least. We've got a lot of calls. A lot of people are asking about Pakistan and India, as well as Pakistan and Afghanistan. Nick in Lincoln, Nebraska. Make it quick, Nick. Hi.
Yeah, that was my main question. Was I know Pakistan and India, who also have nuclear weapons, have always had mistrust and even conflict on their border. If Pakistan looks like they're destabilizing, is there a chance India could get drawn in and this become a much larger conflict?
Well, India already is drawn in. India is really supporting Afghanistan, and every now and then you hear about a bombing at the Indian embassy or the Indian consulate in Afghanistan. A lot of people believe that the Pakistanis or the Pakistani intelligence is behind this. Where it really affects the United States is that we are constantly pressing on Pakistan to secure their border with Afghanistan so the Taliban and these other terrorists can't keep going back and forth. But when the Pakistani army gives us the list of equipment they need, we see things that have no use on the Afghanistan border and would much more likely be used in a war against India. That's Pakistan's chief concern. They don't care about the Taliban.
I'm concerned about the other side, the other border. If you had Taliban control of this country, this whole question of movement back and forth, I mean, what would be the major consequence for our effort in Afghanistan?
Well, there's a few consequences. First of all, it would be a safe haven. And that's not just a consequence for Afghanistan. That's a consequence for us. We saw what happened when Afghanistan was a safe haven. That's number one. Number two, we wouldn't be able to supply our forces through Afghanistan.
Right.
Afghanistan is landlocked. The Central Asian countries don't help us. The Islamic Republic of Iran certainly won't help us. And if Pakistan's cut off, then Afghanistan can wither and, again, become a safe haven.
And the safe haven, more than safe haven, I mean, the reason we went after Afghanistan was it was the center of activity. Pakistan would become the center of activity, planning and so on, execution of efforts against the West, would it not?
Indeed, it would.
Wow. Okay. Let's go to... well, all right, fine. Let's go to Robert in San Antonio. I thought this was OBE, but maybe not. Hi, Robert.
Yeah, it could be the center of activity already, you know, but I just wanted to ask him if he knew what AQ Khan has been up to. I think he's been released. And is he marketable? Is he, you know, possibly up to his old tricks?
Thanks, Robert.
Yes, just AQ Khan was the Pakistani nuclear scientist, the so-called father of the bomb, and he was the one that, according to the IAEA, according to documents we seized from the Libyans when we went in there, he was the one that helped the Libyans with their bomb program. And we know he went to Tehran several times when, according to the national intelligence estimate, Iran was working on its nuclear weapons design. Short answer to Robert, we don't know what he's up to. Yes, he's been released. Yes, he's a national hero to many in Pakistan. The Pakistani government released him because they wanted to. It was really an affront to the Obama administration. It's a big question mark.
45 seconds, Michael. What do you think spins out in the next couple of weeks with this Taliban government, Pakistan government issue?
I do believe that we're going to see the Pakistani government mobilize up into the region. They're not going to be effective. It's going to fight into a stalemate. But what I do hope will happen from this is that Hillary Clinton will realize this isn't all about poverty. This is about ideology. And the Obama administration more broadly will recognize that this is what happens when you negotiate with the Taliban.
Thank you very much, Michael Rubin, the man making intelligence count in the nick of time, always. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. That's a national resource. Pete Hoekstra coming up on CIA interrogations. If you're going to investigate the lawyers and the officials, how about the members of Congress who said go ahead and do it? Put them in the dock. I think that's part of Pete's point. We'll find out. Stay with us. It's morning. It's America. Therefore, it's morning in America.